Yeah, we've been getting rain every night here.
I guess we have, yeah, just at nighttime though.
Okay, as soon as the otter clicks in here, we're ready to go. Hello, everyone out there. We'll get started in just a second. It's the otter. Okay, I believe we're ready to go. Hello, every night, everyone.
Every night,
Every night.
every
I'm Dr. Roger
time.
Paul, and tonight we're going to continue our study on paper 132, Sojourn at Rome. This should be our last part of this. This is part three, and we're on page 1463 of the original book. That's paper 132, section 5, paragraph 15. And I actually put down paragraph 14 on the slide here to start because this really started on the paragraph we were on last week, which was paragraph 14. Then
Yeah.
there's that one there, you know. So he was saying he was giving this advice. So let's go on to the next one. And Diane, you want to start reading from there?
Okay. All right. One, as steward of inherited wealth, you should consider its sources. You're under moral obligation to represent the past generation in the honest transmittal of legitimate wealth to succeeding generations after subtracting a fair toll for the benefit of the present generation. But you are not obligated to perpetuate any dishonesty or injustice involved in the unfair accumulation of wealth by your ancestors. Any portion of your inherited wealth which turns out to have been derived through fraud or unfairness, you may dispute in accordance with your convictions of justice, generosity, and restitution. The remainder of your legitimate inherited wealth you may use in equity and transmit in security as the trustee of one generation for another. Wise discrimination and sound judgment should dictate your decisions regarding the bequest of riches to your successors. So,
you're muted.
Yeah, I got it. So basically, what Jesus is telling him, you have a right to take part of the wealth out and use for your own generation, but the other amounts of it should be passed on to future generations for their benefit. But those generations, if you got your wealth from dishonesty or unfairness, they should not continue on doing that, which makes perfect sense if you think about it. Okay, I'll take the next one. Everyone who enjoys wealth as a result of discovery should remember that one individual can live on earth but a short season and should therefore make adequate provisions for the sharing of these discoveries in helpful ways by the largest number of possible by the largest possible number of his fellow men. Well, the discoverer should not be denied all reward for efforts of discovery, neither should he selfishly presume to lay claim to all the advantages and blessings to be derived from the uncovering of nature's hoarded resources. So you're not just because you find something, it doesn't give you the right to hoard every bit of it, right? Which makes perfect sense. All right, Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
Yes. Three. As long as men choose to conduct the world's business by trade and barter, they are entitled to a fair and legitimate profit. Every tradesman deserves wages for his services. The merchant is entitled to his hire. The fairness of trade and the honest treatment accorded to one's fellows in the organized business of the world create many different sorts of profit wealth, and all these sources of wealth must be judged by the highest principles of justice, honesty, and fairness. The honest trader should not hesitate to take the same profit which he would gladly accord his fellow trader in a similar transaction. While this sort of wealth is not identical with individually earned income, when business dealings are conducted on a large scale, at the same time, such honestly accumulated wealth endows its possessor with a considerable equity as regards a voice in its subsequent distribution.
So not only are you entitled to wages for your services or work, but you're also entitled to an increase in wealth as you deal with other people. But it's kind of interesting in this paragraph because Jesus basically states, do unto others in business as you would have them do to you, right?
Correct.
I mean, and that's an important point in the middle of this. All right. Pam, how you doing tonight? Would you like to take the
I'm good.
next
I
one?
just walked in the door just a short time ago.
All right.
Number four, the mortal who knows God and seeks to do the divine will can stoop to engage in the oppressions of wealth. No noble will strive to accumulate riches and amass wealth, power, by the enslavement of unfair exploitation of his brothers in the flesh. Riches are a moral curse and a spiritual stigma when they are derived from the sweat of oppressed mortal man. All such wealth should be restored to those who have thus been robbed, or to their children and their children's children. An enduring civilization cannot be built upon the practice of defrauding the laborer of his hire.
So slavery is out of the question, isn't it?
Yeah,
According to
but
this.
reminds me, what was the little guy's name? Zacchaeus. He climbed the sycamore tree, and he stood up on a stool and told everyone he was gonna give back to them.
And that's what you should do if you've gotten wealth from devious background, right? Something you shouldn't have done in the first place, right? All right, Jane, would you take the next one, please?
I'm outside. It may not come across well.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I can hear you fine. Can
I
you
can
see
hear you
me?
plain.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give it a try then.
Okay.
Honest wealth is entitled to interest as long as men borrow and lend. That which is fair interest may be collected, provided the capital land was legitimate wealth. First, cleanse your capital before you lay claim to the interest. Do not become so small and grasping that you would stoop to the practice of usury. Never permit yourself to be so selfish as to employ money power to gain unfair advantage over your struggling fellows. Yield not to the temptation to take usury from your brother in financial distress.
I have one double word for this.
What's that?
Credit cards. That's about as close to usury as you could ever get, right? Because they let you use a little bit of money and then they charge you up to, I think it's up to like 29% in some cases for people, you know, and that is usury. I don't care what anybody says, you know. So enough said about that. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Diane, you're up again.
Six. If you chance to secure wealth by flights of genius, if your riches are derived from the rewards of an inventive endowment, do not lay claim to an unfair portion of such rewards. The genius owes something to both his ancestors and his prodigy. Likewise, is he under obligation to the race, nation, and circumstances of his inventive discoveries. He should also remember that it was as man among men that he labored and wrought out his inventions. It would be equally unjust to deprive the genius of all his increment of wealth, and it will ever be impossible for men to establish rules and regulations applicable equally to all these problems of the equitable distribution of wealth. You must first recognize man as your brother, and if you honestly desire to do by him as you would have him do by you, the commonplace dictates of justice, honesty, and fairness will guide you in the just and impartial settlement of every recurring problem of economic rewards and social justice.
Have y'all ever noticed how once someone becomes wealthy, later on in years, they start to give it away to charities and stuff? Right? Y'all ever notice that? And this is part of this innate ability in the human mind to realize that we individually don't have the right to claim everything. We must share it among each other as much as possible. So that's all I'm going to say about that. All right. Next, seven. Except for the just and the legitimate fees of earning in administration, no man should lay personal claim to that wealth which time and chance may cause to fall into his hands. Accidental riches should be regarded somewhat in the light of a trust to be expended for the benefit of one's social or economic group. The possessors of such wealth should be accorded the major voice in the determination of the wise and effective distribution of such unearned resources. Civilized man will not always look upon that which he controls as his personal and private possession. So sometime in the future, we will address this differently than we do right now. Okay, Rodney.
So I've got a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Obviously, this is Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right
Who's
now,
he
it'd
talking
be
to?
another time.
He's talking to a wealthy man that
Okay.
asked him his advice about how to distribute his wealth.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Okay, eight. If any portion of your fortune has been knowingly derived from fraud, if aught of your wealth has been accumulated by dishonest practices or unfair methods, if your riches are the product of unjust dealings with your fellows, make haste to restore all these ill-gotten gains to the rightful owners. Make full amends and thus cleanse your fortune of all dishonest riches.
You think we might need a Department of Moral Values in
Yes,
the
I think so.
Might help, you think? All right. Let's go on, Pam.
Nine. Trusteeship of the wealth of one person for the benefit of others is a solemn and sacred responsibility. Do not hazard or jeopardize such a trust. Take for yourself of any trust, only that which all honest men would allow.
All right, the big P here is honest men, right? That would allow. All right, Jane, would you take the next one, please?
Okay, that part of your fortune which represents the earnings of your own mental and physical efforts, if your work has been done in fairness and equity, is truly your own. No man can gainsay your right to hold and use such wealth as you may see fit, provided your exercise of this right does not work harm upon your fellows.
Because you don't want them to do harm to you, right?
right.
Okay. I need to go back up again there.
When Jesus had finished counseling him, this wealthy Roman arose from his couch and, in saying farewell for the night, delivered himself of this promise: "My good friend, I perceive you are a man of great wisdom and goodness, and tomorrow I will begin the administration of all my wealth in accordance with your counsel."
So he made a change in his own life, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, six, social ministry. Here in Rome also occurred that touching incident in which the creator of a universe spent several hours restoring a lost child to his anxious mother. This little boy had wandered away from his home, and Jesus found him crying in distress. He and Gained were on their way back to the libraries, but they devoted themselves to getting the child back home. Gained never forgot Jesus's comment. "You know, Gained, most human beings are like this lost child. They spend much of their time crying in fear and suffering in sorrow, when in very truth, they are but a short distance from safety and security, even as this child was only a little way from home. And all those who know the way of truth and enjoy the assurance of knowing God should esteem it a privilege, not a duty, to offer guidance to their fellows in their efforts to find the satisfactions of living. We do not Did we not supremely enjoy this ministry of restoring this child to his mother? So do those who lead men to God experience the supreme satisfaction of human service." And from that day forward, for the remainder of his natural life, Gained was continuously on the lookout for lost children who he might restore to their homes.
Oh,
It's
nice.
touching. Isn't that
Nice.
nice? So
Yeah.
bringing people back to God and their way back to God on their ascension program really is the greatest joy in life. That's what he's saying here. Okay, Rodney, I think you're up again.
Okay. There was the widow with five children whose husband had been accidentally killed. Jesus told Gained about the loss of his own father by an accident, and they went repeatedly to comfort this mother and her children. While Gained sought money from his father to provide food and clothing, they did not cease their efforts until they had found a position for the eldest boy so that he could help and the care of the family.
Just like Jesus cared for his family, right? When he was younger. All right, Pam.
That night, as Gounod listened to the recital of these experiences, he said to Jesus good-naturedly, "I propose to make a scholar or a businessman of my son. And now you start out to make a philosopher and a philanthropist of him." And Jesus smilingly replied, "Perhaps we will make him all four. Then can he enjoy a fourfold satisfaction in life as his ear for the recognition of human melody will be able to recognize four tones instead of one." "Then," said Gounod, "I perceive that you really are a philosopher. You must write a book for future generations." And Jesus replied, "Not a book. My mission is to live a life in this generation and for all generations. I," but he stopped, saying to Gained, "My son, it is time to retire."
So he was preparing for his mission in life, wasn't he?
He had to
Okay.
catch himself.
Yeah, he had to catch himself. Okay, see, Jane, you're back up again.
Seven trips about Rome. One, Jesus, Gounod, and Gained made five trips away from Rome to points of interest in the surrounding territory. On their visit to the northern Italian lakes, Jesus had the long talk with Gannad concerning the impossibility of teaching a man about God if the man does not desire to know God. They had casually met a thoughtless pagan while on their journey up to the lakes, and Gannad was surprised that Jesus did not follow out his usual practice of enlisting the man in conversation, which would naturally lead up to the discussion of spiritual questions. When Gannad asked his teacher why he evinced so little interest in this pagan, Jesus answered,
"Okay, this reminds me of something today, y'all. I worked all day, almost 2 o'clock this afternoon, on the podcast for chapter four, or part four of our Jesus, Who, What, When, and Where. And it was on my chapter four for my new book, and did the podcast from it. You know, these podcasts I'm making is two people. I write it so that I can make it into a two-person podcast. They're answering questions to each other. But anyway, it came out pretty long today, and after I got done with it, it was 26 minutes long, and it'll be out at midnight tonight, but it's part four of that. And it's interesting that all the things he's saying in this paragraph about bringing people to God is something that they have to desire for themselves. You can't beat them over the head with it. We've said many times, you can't take the Urantia book and beat anybody over the head with it because they won't listen, right? They have to have that desire within themselves. And if there's no desire to find God and there's no wanting to find God, then it doesn't matter what you say to them because they won't budge where they are, okay? And that reminded me of that today. And the video came out so wonderful. I mean, it's just a great video to listen to. But it talks about the circuits and that sort of thing. But when I go back through this stuff again, the stuff I already taught before and prepared it for the book, all these gems come out that just hit you right in the face every time. You know, even my wife has said, you know, she can't believe these aren't real people that's talking because, you know, I just write the scripts and then put these artificial intelligent voices in them. But they come out so well. I'm flabbergasted every time I put one. So that'll be out tomorrow. I may send you a copy after it comes out online because you can't go to the link until it's out online with YouTube. So I'll send y'all a copy of it when it comes out tomorrow sometime, if I can remember. Okay, let's go on to the next one. This is a little bitty one, dear. Can you read that?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
I think so. Gannad, the man who was not hungry for truth. He was not dissatisfied with himself. He was not ready to ask for help. And the eyes of his mind were not open to receive light for the soul. That man was not ripe for the harvest of salvation. He must be allowed more time for the trials and difficulties of life to prepare him for the reception of wisdom and higher learning. Or if we could have him live with us, we might by our lives show him the Father in heaven. And thus he becomes so attracted by our lives as sons of God that he would be constrained to inquire about our Father. You cannot reveal God to those who do not seek for him. You cannot lead unwilling souls into the joys of salvation. Man must become hungry for truth as a result of the experience of living, or he must desire to know God as a result of contact with the lives of those who are acquainted with the Divine Father, before another human being can act as the means of leading such a fellow mortal to the Father in heaven. If we know God, our real business on earth is so to live as to permit the Father to reveal himself in our lives. And thus will all God's seeking persons see the Father and ask for our help in finding out more about the God who in this manner finds expression in our lives.
What a good lesson.
Isn't that a great lesson? It's just, you know, you can't force people to find God. They have to find it on their own. They have to want to find God, right? So that's just a wonderful, wonderful lesson. It was on this visit to Switzerland, up in the mountains, that Jesus had an all-day talk with both father and son about Buddhism. That's, of course, because Buddhism was the main religion in India at the time. Many times, Gainit had asked Jesus direct questions about Buddha, but he had always received more or less an evasive replies. Now, in the presence of the Son, the Father asked Jesus a direct question about Buddha, and he received a direct reply. Said Gainit, "I would like to know what you think about Buddha." And Jesus answered. And there's the Alps there
Oh,
in Switzerland while we're doing it.
it's
So,
interesting that Jesus went to Switzerland.
yeah, it is. You know,
Yeah.
you don't think of him traveling around that much, do you?
Yeah.
Would you take this one, Rodney?
Yes. Your Buddha was much better than your Buddhism. Buddha was a great man, even a prophet to his people, but he was an orphan prophet. By that, I mean that he early lost sight of his spiritual father, the Father in heaven. His experience was tragic. He tried to live and teach as a messenger of God, but without God. Buddha guided his ship of salvation right up to the safe harbor, right up to the entrance to the haven of mortal salvation. And there, because of faulty charts of navigation, the good ship ran aground. There it has rested these many generations, motionless and almost hopelessly stranded. And thereon have many of your people remained all these years. They live within hailing distance of the safe waters of rest, but they refuse to enter because the noble craft of the good Buddha met the misfortune of grounding just outside the harbor. And the Buddhist peoples never will enter this harbor unless they abandon the philosophic craft of their prophet and seize upon his noble spirit. Had your people remained true to the spirit of Buddha, you would have long since entered your haven of spirit tranquility, soul rest, and assurance of salvation.
Now, do y'all understand what he's saying here?
Yes.
You can't have a religion, period, of any kind, I don't care what it is, without the Father in heaven. What was that, Jane? Oh, I thought she said something. So if you have no basis, the Father in heaven, which is the basis for everything, then you have the basis for nothing. So if you believe in nothingness, then you will never find the salvation you're looking for, which is one step away to having faith in God the Father. And that's as simple as you can say it, right? And there's many religions out there like that. They have all this ceremony and all these things they do. You know, they go to churches and they have these creeds and all sorts of other things, but they have no relationship with God the Father. And without the relationship with God the Father, there's no recognition in God the Son, Jesus, Michael, right? And without the recognition of Jesus and God as your God of your local universe, there's no way you can find yourself the way back to God the Father in paradise. Okay. When Jesus said, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father," he literally meant that because he was the Father of our local universe. But if you see him, you see the reflection of the original Father, not only in him, but within your own soul. All right. So that's as simple as you can make it, which is too bad, too, because it's a very sad situation to be in. Pam, would you
You
take the
see,
next one? Yep.
Gonad, Buddha knew God in spirit, but failed clearly to discover him in mind. The Jews discovered God in mind, but largely failed to know him in spirit. Today, the Buddhists flounder about in a philosophy without God, while my people are piteously enslaved to the fear of a God without a saving philosophy of life and liberty. You have a philosophy without a God. The Jews have a God, but are largely without a philosophy of living as related thereto. Buddha, failing to envision God as a spirit and as a father, failed to provide in his teaching the moral energy and the spiritual driving power which a religion must possess if it is to change a race and exalt a nation.
Can't have it without God. You can't have anything without that relationship to God, right? All
We've got
right.
to have philosophy too.
Yeah, you have to. There has
Good
to be some
philosophy.
kind of philosophy, even if it's the most basic of all, right? You know, Jesus said many times, what you have to be saved? Faith. That's it. It's that little faith. You can learn all the rest of it when you get to the mansion worlds if you have to. It's nice to know in this world, prepare yourself. But if you have nothing else, at least have faith in God and you'll get there, right? That's as simple as it can be. All right. Jane, would you take the next one, please? She's still there?
You're muted, Jane.
Nope, she must have stepped out. Diane, would you take the next one there?
Sure. Then exclaimed Ganad, "Teacher, lest you and I make a new religion, one good enough for India and big enough for Rome, and maybe we can trade it to the Jews for Yahweh." And Jesus replied, "Ganad, religions are not made. The religions of men grow up over long periods of time, while the revelations of God flash upon the earth in the lives of the men who reveal God to their fellows. But they did not comprehend the meaning of these prophetic words."
We really got lucky as in our revelation, didn't we, of God? You know, think of all the information that the Urantia book provides to us. It's almost,
Amazing.
it's amazing. It's amazing, but almost incomprehensible, isn't it? It really is. All right. That night after they had retired, Ganad could not sleep. He talked a long time with his father and finally said, "You know, father, I sometimes think Joshua is a prophet," and my father only sleepily replied, "My son, they are others," because there were a lot of prophets during that period of time, right? All right, Rodney.
From this day, for the remainder of his natural life, Ganad continued to evolve a religion of his own. He was mightily moved in his own mind by Jesus's broad-mindedness, fairness, and tolerance. In all their discussions of philosophy and religion, this youth never experienced feelings of resentment or reactions of antagonism.
Can you imagine the influence that Jesus had on this 17-year-old? You know,
No kidding.
it would be amazing, right? Pam, would you take our last paragraph there?
From this day, for the remainder of his life, Ganad continued to evolve. I think that was the one that was just read.
Oh, it was. I changed it, my lower one, didn't, not my
What
upper one. Here we go. Try it again.
a scene for the celestial intelligence to behold! This spectacle of the Indian lad proposing to the creator of a universe that they make a new religion. And though the young man did not know it, they were making a new and everlasting religion right then and there. This new way of salvation, the revelation of God to man, through and in Jesus, that which the lad wanted most. Sorry? That which the lad wanted most to do, he was unconsciously actually doing, and it was and is ever thus. That which the enlightened and reflective human imagination of spiritual teaching and leading wholeheartedly and unselfishly wants to do and be becomes measurably creative in accordance with the degree of moral dedication to the divine doing of the Father's will. When man goes in partnership with God, great things may and do happen.
And that's with each and every one of us, isn't it?
Yep.
These
Yep.
great things can and do happen one at a time. Okay, let me next time we'll be on paper 133, The Return from Rome. Get some good lessons on that too. All right, let's say our prayer of acceptance. Let me swap out the screen here. Let's see. Oops, didn't share it. Let's try it again. There we go. All right. Well, Jane, since you didn't get to read that last one, you want to read our prayer of acceptance for us?
Sure. Sorry, the phone was ringing. I
That's okay, dear.
tried
You got to
to
take care of
turn it off.
business.
No,
Yeah.
and I tried to mute the thing so it wouldn't disturb you, but it
Oh, we
wouldn't
heard
work
the
out.
whole conversation. No, we didn't.
Oh, did
It
you?
was very interesting.
<it?
That's what I'm always afraid of with
laughs>
a phone. You know? You think you switch it over and you're telling them something you didn't want them to hear. Okay. All right.
I do. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
Amen. And thank you all for joining us. Yes.
Can you do me a favor, Roger? In
Yeah.
the last paragraph, there was a sentence. I like to write it down. It
Okay.
said, when man makes a partnership with God, I just don't want to misquote it. Can you read it to me?
Yeah,
Great
actually, I
things
can
will.
swap it back over so you can see it
Great
real
things will and do happen.
great things will and do happen.
Great, great things will and do happen.
I think that's
Things
it.
will.
This should be
Is
up
that how it
now.
is?
Let's
Yeah.
see.
When men goes, no, not, not makes, when men goes. When man goes in partnership with God,
Great things may
great
and
things
do
may
happen.
and do happen. And
That's right.
that is 1467.5,
Five or paper 132, seven,
132.
paragraph nine. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
A good sentence.
The great sentence. Yeah.
Great, and it's short.
It
It's
is.
good to the point. Yeah, thank you.
It's a sentence to live by, right?
Well, sometimes it's good to send to young people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
They
That's
want
right.
everything quick and fast.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. That's our lives in a nutshell, right? Quick and fast. It goes by so fast.
Yeah.
All
Yeah.
right, y'all. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
We will see
Thank
you on
you. Thank
Thursday.
you.
All right, everybody
Thank
have a
you.
good one. All
Take
right.
care.
Have a
Yeah.
happy 4th of July.
Fourth of July. Oh,
Thank
that's
you.
Thursday. Is that Thursday? No, that's Thursday. That's Friday. Okay, we'll
Friday.
still have our
Yeah.
meeting Thursday.
Okay. We'll see
Okay.
you before.
Okay. Bye
Okay.
bye.
Love
Bye
you.
bye.
Good night.
Bye bye.